You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Desperate. This is a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. And we've been walking this road for almost two seasons now. We're today on the last episode of season two.
I know.
Well, second part last. One. Part one.
Yeah. Part one of the finale.
Yeah. If you're watching on Hulu, it's on two episodes. That's where I watch. If you're watching on Amazon Prime, I don't know. I should start watching on Amazon. Well, I think they both have commercials. I just don't want any commercials.
Oh, I have bougie Hulu, so I don't have ads.
I know.
I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it. I can't.
There's like lots of pauses. Like even when I watch my other show, I'm like, oh. And I have ad block on, so it now is just like a blank screen for like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
So I don't know which I'd rather have, but I don't know. I just manage. So. Yeah, we've been walking this road for a while, and when I tweeted on our last episode, I started rounding up some lessons that I learned from the episode.
Like, okay.
Just if you need help, get help. Slave labor is always bad.
Yeah, no matter what.
Never write the letter admitting your wrongs. Never.
Never put in writing what you've done.
Never put in writing that you cheated with this woman's, like, soon to be husband. It's been a good two seasons so far. Like how this usually works, you know, we're gonna go through our recap of last episode, our desperate deeds, which I hope you, I don't know, Jordan and I haven't checked in about our desperate deeds. Do you have one for today? Locked and loaded?
Do.
Okay.
I do.
All right. I'm excited. And then then we go into our full recap, and then we'll do our little evaluation, our fuck, marry, kill. Which fuck has been hard this season. It's been hard to want to fuck some of these people.
This has been a, like, not very thirsty season, I
feel
like.
Oh, no, nobody was, like, we were not getting, we were not, like, Paul was not serving Sweater Paul. And, like, Mike was just default a lot of times. I've been disappointed and, like.
Mike had literally nothing to do in this season once Susan and him broke up. Like, he's barely been in it. So, like, we can't even. Yeah, like, there's nothing for him to do. So we can't even, like, even as a default, it's literally one moment of him being like, Susan, what's wrong? And then we don't hear from him again.
It's him just showing up. We did get Trey McDougal / Kyle MacLachlan. Mm-hmm. MacLachlan. I always say his name wrong, but he's spoon-worthy, so.
I know, that's so luckily. Positive.
But we barely got him, too. We got him in an episode, and then he, like, never came back, so.
No, he did. He for a second.
Okay, when she met him at the movies, that's the only episode so far.
No, when her house burned down, he was there, like, this, helping clean
up. Yes, last episode. He was there. Yeah. But that was even, so okay, that was like one barely. He was like, hey, Susan.
That's what I'm saying, though. It's so random. I was like, why did they have him come back for, like, this moment in one episode? I don't know. I found that very, very strange.
They were just
strange.
Trying to make Mike jealous. And it worked.
Apparently.
And it worked.
Yeah, it did work.
But... dang. Yeah, we can just go into what's been going on. Hope you all have been having a wonderful week. I'm thinking, oh, we'll talk about some current news and our desperate deeds, I guess. I think we might have some current news. Yeah, that's what I'll do. But I don't typically like to cover, like, current things. We are always recording a little bit ahead, so... but yeah, for deeds, I'll put it in there. Hope everyone's well. Okay. Thank you for listening to us. You're probably listening on a Monday. That's when we drop. If not, you can always tune in on Monday and it should be there. If there is something wrong with the recording, let us know because we left 2 minutes of an episode up for like a week. But we appreciate all of you listening and tell your friends, follow, like, share. We have an Instagram. We have a Twitter. And rate and review. Do that. Leave nice reviews. Leave 5 stars. If not, tell us why. I'm still upset that somebody was leaving. Somebody left like a review that had no feedback.
I know. That sucked. I was like, it's cool, but be constructive.
They were like,
I hate
Desperate Housewives. I hate it. That's probably what they were. I'm going to say they just hate Desperate Housewives.
Either that or they just hate women is what I've decided. I'll be that guy.
It was an assault against women.
It was
misogyny. But yeah, we can talk about last episode. I'll just talk about what happened with Susan. Her house is burned down. And we remember mm-hmm. she sent this letter to Edie admitting that she slept with Carl while they were together. And it was like, mm-hmm. we saw a part of the letter in the episode and it was pathetic, but we didn't get the whole gist of like everything she said. But
it was also really short.
Yeah, it wasn't that long. She was just like, please forgive me, but I slept with Carl, basically. And Edie burned her house down. And so now we are left with the ashes of Susan's house. The insurance mm-hmm. adjuster comes by and he's like, hey, we are investigating this. We think it's arson and we cannot give you your money yet. And Susan's like, nobody hates me. Everybody loves me, which was the most I couldn't handle that statement. It was big cheerleader energy. So then she sees Edie eating a popsicle across the street, which was also random. And Edie is not mm-hmm. helping clean up the ashes of her arson. And Susan puts the pieces together and she confronts Edie and Edie admits it, but Susan doesn't have it recorded and Edie is smart and she's like, who's going to fucking believe you? They're not going to fucking find out. So that becomes Susan's mission and she calls up Mike because he used to be a detective of sorts, if we recall. And she's like,
and they needed something for him to
do. Yeah, they needed him to feel her up with her ugly belly button ring. And so mm-hmm. he does that. And he's like, let me help you. And like puts this wire on her. And then she goes up to Edie. And Edie is like eating popcorn. We can't really hear the confession. And then she's not hiding it very well. She's pretty conspicuous about that she has a wire and she's trying to get this recorded. Edie catches on and rips open her shirt and chases her out into the park. And there's a beehive and they brawl and the beehive, like the bees get irritated and they attack Edie. Mm-hmm. Edie ends up in the hospital and Susan goes to apologize and is still trying to like barter with her while she is swollen and infected from a million bee stings and looks like ugly as fuck, like shout out makeup department. And Susan's like, look, I guess you could just say you saw some vagrant like set my house on fire. And Edie is like, shut the fuck up and leave me alone forever. I'm gonna ruin your life. I hate you. Nothing you say is ever gonna fix this. And she's like mm-hmm. upset. And Susan's like, I don't get it. And then Edie is like, look, you fucking think everybody likes you because they help you, but it's really pathetic and you're helpless. And that's the truth. It's the truth that you can't take care of yourself. And I was there for it. Like, usually I'm like, people could be nicer, but I think Susan deserved that one. And
yeah, she needed a call out.
And look, it worked magic because after that, she moves out of motherfucking Bree's house. Mike offers her to stay with him and she's like, no, I'm going to figure this out. And it makes Susan be more independent. And I was like, maybe she mm-hmm. needed some tough love. So that's where we end up, that Susan decides that she's going to figure everything out on her own. Edie for sure hates her. And Mike is like in love with Susan again. So,
yeah, out of nowhere for absolutely no reason. But OK. Yeah. So the next housewife we could kind of talk about, I'll dive into Lynette. So Lynette left us hanging last episode where
it was hard. It was hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so as we all know, Tom was using his company credit card to go to Atlantic City to do God knows what.
So stupid.
But it's very clearly an affair based on the purchases. And Lynette kind of like figures out what's going on, but she doesn't like call him out about it right away. She kind of like plays the long game a little bit with it. And Tom's basically like, well, I'm going to go to Atlantic City because he makes up some crazy story. And I'm just like, is this what you're going to do from now on? Just make up crazy fucking stories all the time? Like, what the hell? But anyway, he says he's basically like he has a job opportunity. So he goes out there and Lynette kind of calls him out like while they're having this conversation. And she's just like, I know about these expenses. Like, this is really weird. And he just like gaslights the fuck out of her and makes her feel like an insane person.
It was rude.
To the point where she, like, apologizes for asking a perfectly reasonable question, like, why the fuck did you buy flowers? Like, what
the fuck? So fucking rude.
I was so triggered. But Tom goes and Lynette leaves her kids with Mrs. McCluskey, who gives her sage advice that basically says, like, he's lucky he saw my husband, essentially.
I would kill him. She implies that she would kill him, and we liked it.
Yeah. I was there for it. But Lynette gets there, and she's, like, sitting in a car watching him while he's, like, standing outside the hotel. He calls her. So she's, like, awkwardly, like, trying to make sure he doesn't see her, and they're, like, asking each other questions, like, oh, can I talk to this guy you're supposedly with? That he's, like, can I talk to the kids? And she's, like, fuck, he can't know that I'm here. And then, like, an alarm goes off, and everybody gets confused.
It should have all been over then, but it wasn't.
Yeah, like, oh, my God. So Lynette follows him to this house where he enters and is given wine, and a woman leads him up the stairs.
A hot looking, like, we never see her face, but, like, you can assume that she's pretty hot. Like,
yeah. Lynette's pretty devastated, and she, now that he's having an affair, she basically goes back home, gets their children, and gets the fuck out of there. Tom gets home, and there's, like, an empty house, and he asks Mrs. McCluskey where his kids are, and she's like, oh, like, she followed your ass and knows about the other woman. Yeah. And he's just like,
Tom came home, and he was like, what? He was like, no way. Like, yeah, I don't know what he thought was gonna happen. Like, would love to interview Tom, the character. Like, what did you think was gonna fucking happen?
Like, you have to wonder, though, like, when he doesn't have a job that allows him to travel, like, so his whole concept was then gonna be, I'm just gonna, like, make up an excuse to go to Atlantic City all the time.
To keep going to Atlantic City, which is, like, not a city you should go to all the time. Like, it's basically the Las Vegas of the East Coast, like...
like a trash version. Yeah.
Like, I don't know what he thought was going to happen. So he just has a gambling addiction all of a sudden. Like, mm-hmm. Par for the course.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. Yes. Meanwhile, Gabby also had an infuriating encounter. Oh, okay. She had multiple infuriating encounters with Carlos. Mm-hmm. I felt triggered for her. I felt like she handled it really well because everything that he did was so rude and so hurtful. Yao Mei is still there and still pregnant because they impregnated her last episode, where Carlos, I think it was two episodes ago, that he was getting the hots for her. Like, it was implied that he masturbated to her when he had to give a semen sample, so that was all concerning. So now she's pregnant, it's confirmed, and he is, like, asking about her boobs because she's, like, irritated by Gabby's perfume. And then Carlos is like, how are your boobs? And, like, okay, yeah, you can ask about a chick's boobs, but, like, don't. And so Gabby's triggered by that. And then she's not, because she's like, oh, we're pregnant. And they go to the doctor and they are pregnant. And then Carlos is hugging Yao Mei a little bit too long. And Yao Mei is repulsed by Gabby, like, by her smell, by everything. Like, so Gabby can't be near Yao Mei. And Carlos begins, like, choosing Gabby over and over. And he's, like, cleaning the house. He's cleaning the house for Yao Mei, their servant. And that was triggering because I'm like, oh, my God, he was such a dick to Gabby all the time. I could just say he would have never done any of this for Gabby. He gives up their bed to Yao Mei. They're sleeping in a little twin bed, and he accidentally says she's the mother of my child, which is rude as fuck because Gabby's like, that's my egg in her. Let's not forget that she's just some chick. So
yeah,
this is all rude. And then Yao Mei was irritating me as well because I felt like she was acting like she didn't, like, she's acting like, I don't know how to explain it, but Yao Mei, I just feel like, is in on it. Like, I feel like Yao Mei is into Carlos because at the end they have, like, a moment. She makes him a sandwich and is, like, into him. But the whole time, it's just, like, I hate everything that's going on. And Carlos sleeps on the couch because he gets upset with Gabby that Gabby is upset. And I think that's stupid whenever that happens. And, like, that's just what's going on. So he sleeps on the couch, and Yao Mei is like, what's up? I have a sandwich for you. And they have a moment. She might as well have fed it to him. Like, ugh. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on with them.
Yeah, no, the whole thing was really fucking gross and super fucking annoying. Fucking Carlos. Especially after, like, the episode with Gabby's mom and then this, you're just like, okay, like, you're the most bipolar husband of all time. I know.
Carlos had a really good streak this season of me actually liking him. Then he does shit like this, and I feel like he's gonna cheat on her. If I had to foresee anything, he would throw it back to, you said I could cheat on you. If I have to guess.
Which I feel like the context has changed, dude. So I'm like,
yeah, it's maybe way different now, but whatever.
Like, you have a fucking kid on the way. Is this really what you want to be doing?
Yeah.
Last, we have Brie. So Brie had quite the week. She gets super pumped when Susan and Julie move in, and she's like, it's going to be like a sleepover. She's vibing, and she's trying to get Danielle to be excited too, but Danielle's like, well, you're acting super weird, actually, ever since Andrew left. And Brie's like, what? And Brie's like, no. And she's like, I'm just going to focus all my attention on you. I love only you. I'm going to be the best fucking mother that ever lived. Like, she just, like, loses her mind she's a little like, bit. What? Like, talking about it. Yeah. What? And so Danielle is like, well, you forgot my birthday. And Brie's like, oh, fuck. Like, oops. And so they throw, like, this big birthday party. It's her 17th birthday, everybody. So remember how Andrew was, like, trying to pimp her out to, like, an old dude?
And yeah. She's dating Matt, who is 19, apparently.
Oh, and they're definitely having sex.
Yeah, statutory rape as fuck.
Everywhere on the show. So the next day, Brie is... Oh, and Danielle also asked for Andrew's room. And Brie's like, fuck no, that's not happening. But the next day, Brie is making, like, a balloon thing before they were super popular. Like, because you know how those are, like, everywhere
those
now?
Those are so popular now.
Yeah, like, that was a little ahead of its
they
time.
They have them
but it's,
at, like,
a balloon.
Every baby shower ever. They have them at birthday parties. Yeah. Balloons.
Every influencer
event.
Yeah,
balloon 17.
Like, yeah, it's, like, made out of a bunch of balloons. Actually, looks pretty dope. I was like, Danielle, this is, like, Instagram background. Yeah. Like, you should be excited. Danielle, like, freaks out. She's like, no, this is awful. And then Brie's like, well, I also got you a juggler, and what was the other thing she had for the birthday party?
I forget, but there was one more thing, but the juggler was the most insulting. Oh, it was fajita. Yeah. It was fajitas. It was just fajitas. It was, like, food.
Oh, like a fajita bar. Like, that's like a taco guy. That sounds bomb.
That sounds like a fun-ass so birthday.
So far, two of the three things are pretty dope. I could understand being like, Mom, please don't get a juggler, but everything else, I'm like, Danielle,
that's embarrassing.
You're being crazy.
Yeah.
So Brie is like, sure, like, with crazy eyes, she fucking starts stabbing all the balloons, like, really loud. And Susan kind of comes down and is like, hey, buddy, how you doing? And Brie's like, I'm fine. I just got to do this quickly. And Susan's kind of like, you could tell Susan's skeptical. She's concerned about Brie at this point. But anyway, at the birthday party, like, Brie is, like, hyper-focused on, like, icing this cake perfectly. And she fucking... She has a meltdown because when she finally does bring the cake out, someone, like, takes a lick of the frosting, like, with their finger or whatever, and Brie, like, straight up has a meltdown and, like, humiliates the overweight girl at the party.
Yeah, they fat shamed.
Yeah, like, she fucking makes everybody look foolish. Danielle, understandably for once, runs away in tears. I was like, yeah, fair enough. Sorry, girl. And she tries to find Matthew, but she's, like, banging around on the doors. But she, like, bangs on the basement, like, door thing. And I guess in their dungeon.
Yeah, she, like, broke and entered into their house. Because at first she was, like, throwing rocks at his window. And then he wasn't answering.
Yeah, yeah.
Ends up down there. I don't know how she found him. Like, I would have not gone it. I don't think I would have gone into the creepy basement dungeon door.
Fuck no.
I don't know why it's not soundproof. No. That's stupid.
Yeah, that was super weird to me. I thought they fixed that when, like, Susan complained about the sound.
That hip-hop, yeah.
That one time, 18 episodes
where
ago.
Where she had to learn. Where the writers were like, how do we get Susan in Betty's house? She's gonna learn piano.
Awful. So Danielle finds Matthew and they, like, create a plan to escape. We don't see this actually happen, but later Betty comes downstairs and Danielle, like, hits her over the head with, like, a crowbar and steals the key. And even Matthew's like, what the fuck, Danielle? Like, I did not want you to hit her over the head.
Yeah, I didn't want you to nearly kill my mother, but okay.
Yeah. And so later we have, like, a moment where Brie is, like, cleaning up everything and Susan, like, is kind of a friend and, like, helps her clean. And
yeah,
it's, like, it's kind of nice, but, you know, bit of a bare minimum moment for Susan. And then Brie checks herself into a mental institution at the end because she thinks she's about to have a nervous breakdown, which, healthy choice.
Yeah, because Danielle, like, leaves a note and is like, I'm running away. I hate you. And that's, you right. are the worst mom ever. And it is because of you. And I was like,
yeah,
don't write the letter, folks. Don't write it.
Yeah, just don't. Like, just run away. Just Jesus. Don't, like, I don't know.
Don't make your mom feel worse. Like, she's having a fucking hard time. Yeah. I love Brie. I hate that this is happening to her. Her boyfriend slept with her son. That's like, just think about that. Like, your boyfriend slept with your son. Ugh, you have to get rid of two of that. You have to get rid of both of them. You can't just keep one at that point.
And then her last boyfriend murdered her husband.
And then was, like, killed himself.
Her. Yeah. She's had a rough history in a year.
It's just, I feel so bad for her. So last and least, it's Zach and Paul. They're around still. Felicia Tillman around still. Who cares? Like, nobody cares anymore about them. Felicia is trying to avenge Martha Huber, and we loved her last season, but she's been gone. We forgot. Martha Huber, whatever. So Felicia's trying to avenge her sister. She breaks into Paul's house and steals one of his keys that were so nicely labeled in a cabinet, like, available for everyone. Stupid. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. And steals a key. It's taking blood from herself, like, all the time, because she's a certified nurse or whatever. So she's drawing her own blood and saving it to just pull, like, for this grand stunt that she does at the end of the episode, where she pours it all over his floor and, like, cuts off two of her own fingers and puts them in his trunk. And then the cops come. She made a call to the cops being like, I'm going to have to confront him. And the cops come and talk to Paul, and he's like, there was no confrontation. And then they see the fingers in his trunk, and they're like, oh my God, you killed this bitch. And he gets arrested. So, and then she is off in a wilderness cabin somewhere under her real actual name. So not very secretive. Yeah. And is, like, trying to drop off the map for a while. So that's that on that. But now it's time for our desperate deeds.
Oh, man. I go first. Mine's kind of short. Okay.
Mine is too.
Okay, so I have this friend. Her name, or I
should her name, her first and last name and social security number is.
Sorry, friend. I almost outed you, but so we were, like, super tight, and something I would always do, like, when I saw her, like, I would always kind of, like, jump onto her back, like, she was giving me a piggyback ride because I was teeny tiny back then. Yeah. Iconic moment in my life was going to Safeway grocery store, seeing her running and jumping on her back, and it was not her, folks.
Oh, shit.
And that was like the most embarrassing moment of my entire life, I think. I was trying to think of, like, a non-dating example today, and I was like, why haven't I told this story yet? Because it's truly horrible.
I thought you were going to say, like, one day you just got too big and she, like, collapsed, but it wasn't even, her.
No, I jumped on a stranger's back. Like a stranger.
Like a bad sitcom moment.
Yeah, no, it was, like, horrible. Luckily, the lady was, like, funny about it. Like, she was like, oh, my God. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I just, like, assaulted this woman. But she, like, laughed, and I was like, I'm so sorry. I thought you were my friend. And she was like, I assumed you weren't, like, attacking me. Because that is a very attack move to, like, jump on someone. So I was like, wow, it's a good thing this lady didn't have, like, a gun on her.
It was,
or
like,
something.
A Safeway or something? Where was this?
Yeah. Oh, God. I was at a grocery store, so it could have been really bad, guys, but it wasn't. It was okay, but I've learned my lesson. I don't even want to say hi to people. They have to say hi first. Sure.
I never, like, I just keep my head down. You know the amount of times that I've fucking said hi? Like, when you wave and they don't wave back, it's so, like, nothing feels worse. Like, you're like, hey.
It's awful.
And they just fucking ignore you, and you're like, all right.
Yeah.
Don't say hi first, however you say that.
Fuck no. So definitely don't jump on people's backs until you confirm their identity. Yes. Just saying.
Yeah, my desperate deed. I've been reading about Johnny Depp. My desperate deed has to do with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. So I don't know why this trial is so sensationalized, because I don't even know who Amber Heard is, and I don't care about Johnny Depp. He's gross now. And he used to be my celebrity crush, like, long, long time ago when I was much younger. And now he's, like, the grossest old man ever. And he looks raggedy. But it's so sensationalized. Like, the BBC is, like, putting up stories every day about it. And I'm like, the BBC of all people. Like, so I've been reading tons of stuff. Not tons of stuff. I guess I just really checked in today. I've been reading the headlines. And then today I read one of the articles. Because somebody told me that she shit the bed, and I was like, what does that mean, she shit the bed? Like, that could mean a lot of things, but she admitted that she shit in his bed, and I'm like, okay, like, but what if somebody just has an accident in the bed? Like, I don't know if she had, like, digestive. I was so confused by what this person meant when they said she shit the bed. And I was like, was he mad that she shit in the bed accidentally? And this is, like, a part of the abuse? Like, that's where it started? Or, like, I'm confused. She did it for revenge. She was upset with him and she took a shit in his side of the bed. And I
read that today, too. I was like,
that is so desperate.
I have no words. Their whole situation's so desperate.
I'm literally like
back and forth.
The counterclaim. Okay, even the fact that they're not suing each other over the abuse, they're suing each other over the libel related to the abuse, which is the fact that they both like talked to media outlets and said my ex abused me. They're suing each other over talking to the media outlets about it.
Well, I think he's suing her because she wrote an op-ed piece. Like, what started all of this, like, years ago was when she, like, released pictures and then wrote this fucking op-ed, like, this long-ass op-ed about being a survivor. Yeah. And she never names him, but she's like, my ex-husband. And it's like, okay, well, okay, like, we all know who that is.
Yeah.
And so it just turned into this fucking thing, but then she it's so crazy because, like, when you read the story, I don't honestly understand how you could be on either side, because it sounds like they were both fucking horrible people to be married
to. Yeah, the baby's like it ended in mutual abuse. Like, I don't think Johnny Depp is innocent at all, but I don't think he took a shit on her side of the bed.
No, I don't think that he was like this horrible like abuser that she claims he is, but I do think like multiple times there's like a recording of her being like, yeah, I start the physical fights, and I'm like,
yeah, so desperate God. People desperate to shit in your own. I imagine that she slept in that bed once in a while too.
Who knows?
I smell my cat.
Who knows?
When my cat shits, you can smell it. Imagine having a human shit and not in litter.
It's like, I know. Did you read how he was like, I didn't even know how to react to
said
this.
He
was
like,
I don't even know what to do.
He was like, I couldn't even take it. I just laughed. What else was I going to do?
Yeah.
So those are our desperate deeds today. A lighter day of desperate deeds. We're gonna go ahead and watch this episode. It's on Hulu or Amazon Prime. Hopefully you don't have commercials, but if you do have commercials or you don't, you're still going to need to buckle up.
Susan tries being independent, but Mike and Carl have other plans. After finding out Tom's secret, Lynette takes the kids for some time away from home. Bree works on her mental health, while Danielle is in danger. Gabby senses someone is cheating, and it isn't her. Zach pulls the plug on Noah Taylor.
I mean, we can just start there. This timeline is all fucked up, you guys. We don't know the who, what, where, when, or how. We're just existing. It's their world and we're just living in it. And we don't know when shit has happened. I'm saying it's probably been a year. Just generally, like, all these timelines, it's been a year since Mary Alice died.
Okay.
And it's been, I'm going to say, less than a year that Rex died.
It definitely is less than a year because Mary Alice died 1 year ago and Rex didn't die right away.
Yeah. So it's been less than a year that Rex has died. And I'm going to say that Melanie Foster died less than a year ago as well. And this show's lying to us. They don't know shit. So.
They're just lying. I would believe maybe 6 months. If they'd said 6 months, I would have been like, sure.
I'd say Melanie Foster died around the time that Rex did. Right? Well, that was all last episode.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They just want to bring Mary Alice back. They want to keep her alive. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, I do too.
I also have to shout out Mike sucking Susan's face. That hasn't left my head.
That was wild.
A highlight for me. It's not that important, but this episode was popping. This episode was popping. That's what I have to say.
Yeah. A lot of shit was happening.
Zach. We forgot about Zach. And now I'm like, Zach?
Yeah,
whoa.
I have a lot to say about that.
Lots happened, but we're gonna go back to so many flashbacks. Hang on to your britches.
Lots of hairstyles on Susan's head.
It was too much. They went too far. Shout out makeup department. But this episode is season 2, episode 23. I didn't say that before, but you guys all know. You can figure it out. Remember, it's called Remember, part 1. And we'll do part 2 next episode because these were both 45 minutes long. So that's what's up. But we start out with a classic Mary Alice Young. It's a fact of life in every neighborhood. People move in and people move out, although very few pack up and leave at 2 in the morning. But for Betty Applewhite, I said Betty White here. Betty Apple. I was staring at that. I'm like, that's not right. For Betty Applewhite, it had happened once before in Chicago. The same night, one of her sons tried to break up with his girlfriend, a young woman named Melanie Foster. And sorry, you guys, this intro is really long, so you're going to be along for this ride with me for a bit until Jordan takes over the next story. But
I'm here for it.
Dun, dun, dun. We have a flashback. And Betty is just quietly slaying on the piano while Melanie is begging Matt not to dump her. I don't get dumped. If anyone's getting dumped, it's you. And then Matt is like, I want out. And Melanie's like, maybe I'm a bitch, but there's advantages of dating someone like me. And she grabs his dick. And I'm like, all right, you can calm down.
They really try to make her seem like she's like a huge whore.
Calm down, sister. Your sex isn't that good, I promise. Well, Matt's like, my mom's in the other room. Are you crazy? And I'd like to shout out this moment of diversity. Melanie Foster is Asian. So we got to take what we can get here. She gets murdered in this episode, so don't get too excited. She says, we can't have a serious discussion here, so meet me at the lumberyard at 9. And I'm like, bad choice. Bad choice to meet somebody at the lumberyard. Weird.
I wouldn't even like meet you at the lumberyard. Like, that shit's no. creepy.
Hey, let's meet at the lumberyard so we can fuck.
I'd be like what?
So I can get a splinter? No, I don't know.
Like, what the fuck?
So Caleb hears this and he's eating his ice cream happily at this time. And he's like, lumberyard, what's good? And Matt's like, I'm not down. We're done. And then she says, even more reason to show up. No one's better than I do. And then she leaves. And Betty's like, let me finish this piano piece. And Caleb is like, let me finish this ice cream. And everybody's ignoring that Matt was just having a blowout argument with his girlfriend.
I know, that was like weirdly uninvolved for parents.
That she was trying to have sex with him in the living room next door. Yeah. Whatever. So at the lumberyard, Melanie's hanging and she's ready to get back. My notes. She's ready to get pounded. But she turns around the corner and it's Caleb with flowers. And she's like, ew, I hate that. Where's Matt? And he's like, I got here first. I know my way around. I know a shortcut, which is weird. And then she's like, does Matt know you're here? He says, no. He broke up with you. He doesn't want to fucking be with you. He doesn't know that I'm here. And she's like, okay, don't have to rub it in. And he's like, I thought I could be your boyfriend now. And I'm like, dang, how sweet, girl. You just have one lined up for you, I guess. You don't even have to work. Like, I don't know. And she's like, what? And she laughs. And he says, I love you. And she's like, this is hilarious. Tell me it's a joke. Because if you're serious, it's pathetic. And I'm like, wow.
This is so mean. I thought she was so fucking mean right here.
I know. I'm not going to say the C words. I don't have to bleep it out. But that's what she is. She's awful. So then he leans in for the kiss, which it wasn't warranted. And she slaps him. And then he tries to hug her or something. She's like, get off me. And then he just takes a piece of wood and knocks her the fuck out.
No, she hits him with it a bunch of times. And then he takes it from her.
Thank you for correcting me, because that's what my note said, but I, for some reason, it wasn't registering. All I can remember is that he knocks her the fuck out.
Yeah, I do think it's just an important detail that he wasn't the aggressor.
Yeah, she did hit him.
Like, a few times. And not that it's right, but I will say this, he's mentally handicapped, so he probably doesn't even, I mean, he's clearly distraught. I don't think he realizes what he did or his own strength. You know what I mean? Like, he can't comprehend it.
Yeah, and he was, like, made of steel. Like, he wasn't really going down.
Yeah.
And then he knocks her out, and he's like, oh, fuck, Melanie? And then he runs the hell away.
There's blood on his shirt.
Yeah. And then Betty sees that shit when he gets home. Mm-hmm. Then we're back in the real time. And we hear Mary Alice say, in her inaccurate timeline, a year had come and gone since the Applewhites had left Chicago, and Betty thought they could, again, slip away in the middle of the night. She says goodbye to the piano. She's like, bye. Then Caleb says, once we move, how will Matt find us? And she's like, there's no Matt anymore. And then the cops roll up.
Yeah, and arrest her ass.
Yeah, as she soon discovered, it's not that easy to slip away in the suburbs, because in suburbia, when the neighbors hear you're going, they all show up to say goodbye, and everybody's like outside the cop car, and I'd be like, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
If I'm getting arrested, just don't come out and stare at me. Like,
stare from your house like a normal person.
So then we do our quick little intro, and then we come back, and Mary Alice Young is still killing it on this VO. She says, everyone must choose the road they will take in life, and for a special few, that road will lead to Wisteria Lane. They all arrived in the same way, driving up in overloaded trucks, bringing expensive antiques and ordinary dreams. And I remember the first time I saw each of them, I met Susan the day she moved to Wisteria Lane. She seemed delightfully confident. I couldn't help but feel intimidated. And then she locks herself in her moving truck with baby Julie outside. And Mary Alice Young is like, that feeling wouldn't last. Susan's trying to like get out of this moving truck that she's stuck in. She's like yelling to Julie, and then Mary Alice comes to the rescue. They meet, and she's like, wow, if my husband had come to rescue me, I'd never hear the end of it. He thinks I'm a klutz. And I'm like, classic Carl.
I'm like, why did they get married? Like, at what?
Wow, fucking no. And then she's like, okay, well, welcome. If you want to come over for coffee sometime, do it. And Susan is like jazzed at this. She's like, wow, I have a neighbor who wants me over. It's like, I think Carl is minorly abusive.
Yeah, she's depressed, alone. Jesus.
She like can't believe that somebody wants to hang out with her. She's like, you must think I'm crazy. And Mary Alice is like, no, I think you're happy and your baby might be a genius. Then we go to real time, and Susan, because that was all flashback, BT dubs. Real time, Susan is guiding Julie to look at the burned down house with a blindfold. But when she veils what's going on, there's a trailer in front of it, and Susan's like, it might look cramped, but we can't stay at Bree's because Bree is in the mental asylum. But they don't know that Bree lied about it. We'll talk about that later. And Julie's like, why are you doing this to me? I get good grades, I don't do drugs, and I don't come home pregnant. And Susan's like, I'm trying to stand on my own 2 feet. I've got 6 book proposals, and I'm redoing this house. Like, just bear with me. I want you to be proud of me. Let's take a look inside. That's where we're at. If you want to cover Susan and her funky hairdos, we can just keep going.
I actually liked her with the bangs in the first flashback.
I actually thought her hair was kind of fun. I was going to say that too. The first flashback, hair on point. Susan, do that.
Yeah, no, that was really cute. So Susan, like you just explained, shows Julie the new digs, and yeah, Julie's not excited about it. Susan's trying to stand on her own 2 feet, and I did note here that it was a bit ironic that she's like, I'm trying to stand on my own 2 feet, and I can't do it without your support. And I was like, that is like the most like canceled out sentence of all time, but okay. And the next time we see Susan, she's cleaning like the RV, I guess, with a hose, and Tom walks up. So this was kind of a Tom Lynette moment, but I'll kind of tell it here just because Susan's like the catalyst between the two of them. But yeah, as we all know, Lynette left last episode. So Susan looks up at Tom and he's like, hey, like, do you know where Lynette is? Like, I've been trying to call her and she's not answering. And Susan kind of like looks at him sympathetically, but she's like, I really don't know. And he's like, well, I know that you're lying. And she's like, Tom, I really don't. And he's like, okay, well, he gets like frustrated. And she's like, is everything okay? And he's like, yeah, we just had a fight. And then he's like, if you talk to her, can you please tell her to call me? And Susan kind of just looks at him and nods, and he like dips. So once he's like kind of gone, Susan calls Lynette. We see that Lynette's staying in a motel, which we'll kind of come back to that later. But Susan's like, hey, like, Tom's looking for you and I think you should call him. And I'm like, does she know why? Because like, as someone who has also cheated on, I'm kind of like, great advice, Susan. Like, really? Like, oh my God. Lynette tells her that she can't, and Susan's just kind of like, okay. And Lynette's like, I'll call you later. But back on the lane, Susan is spraying down her RV with ant repellent, and Mike rolls up with coffee because he had, like, told her that they'd have a coffee date when she could, like, make coffee again. And it kind of cuts to them sitting on the lawn of her burned down house, just talking and drinking coffee. And this is actually the first time that I feel like they have chemistry.
Yeah, for real. I was like into this.
Yeah, I was like, this is actually a nice scene.
Yeah, I was down.
I was like, the flirting here is like very realistic.
On point.
So Mike's like basically tells Susan like he's really impressed with her. And he's like, I'm just proud of how you've been taking charge of this situation. And it's good to see you get by on your own. And she's like, thanks. And he's like, even if it means that you're not in the market for a relationship right now. And oh, he also calls her sexy about how,
like, yeah, like, I was pretty. Gonna say she was like, I look awful, like, because I've done that. I love it. Like, oh my god,
I was
god.
Like, that's very real.
When I'm like, oh my god, I look like shit, and some dude's like, no, you look good, and you're like, oh my god, I do.
Susan's like, oh, what makes you think that? He's like, oh, just kind of like you implied that you weren't. And she's like, well, sometimes I say things I don't mean. So they start to, like, kind of lean in, and then Carl walks up.
Motherfucking Carl walks up. I was so taken aback. I was shocked. So, I was like, Carl, I forgot about him.
Yeah, he's a fucking buzzkill. He comes up and he's like, I can't believe you're forcing our daughter to live in a house on wheels. And he basically berates Susan about it. And Susan's like, well, this is only temporary, and please don't bug me. I'm having coffee with Mike. And Mike's like, it's fine. And he just, like, gets up to leave, but then, like, gives Susan the biggest fucking smooch. Like, they made out,
and I was turned on.
I liked it. This one, say, like, this was, like, literally the first time I was like, I bought it. I was like,
yes, I bought it. He made out. He did it from the heart. Like, he put his whole heart into it. He went for it. I was into it.
Carl kind of watches in disbelief, and then he apologizes for interrupting. He's like, but this is a family thing.
Well, and then Mike is like, I'll call you later.
Yeah, he's like, see ya. Oh my god. So that was a fun little sexy moment that everybody actually was being attractive. So that was cool. So later we see Mike at a local jewelry store. Carl, like, sees Mike there, so he follows him inside. This is, like, so upsetting. I was like, it wasn't not you. Okay. Yeah. So Mike is, like, looking at the various engagement rings, and Carl goes, what a surprise. And Mike just, like, rolls his eyes. And he's like, just goes back to looking. So Carl acts like he's looking for a battery for his watch and starts asking Mike what he's up to. And Mike's trying to, like, hide that he's buying, like, an engagement ring. But then the jeweler presents it, and he says, it'll sweep you off your feet, or sweep her off her feet. And Carl just, like, laughs, and he's like, you sly dog, you're gonna ask Susan to marry you. And I'm like, you fuck, how is that sly? Like, what is that even, like, Mike's always been very upfront with how he feels, but okay.
I think it's a bit, okay, personally, I'm like, yeah, I know you guys had a great makeout and you're into her again, but I think, like, they shouldn't get married right away again. Like, there's been a lot of water under the bridge there.
Oh, don't worry, I'll get there. Yeah, so Mike's like, can you not tell Susan I want this to be a surprise? And Carl's like, she'll be surprised. And not just by how small that rock is. He leaves Mike. I was like, get over yourself, bro. It's so fucking annoying. But yes, this is where, again, like I said, this last scene with them was the first time I felt like they had chemistry. So then to go from that to him, like, buying her an engagement ring, I'm like, I don't know. Like, there hasn't been enough buildup. Like, I don't feel like the tension's been there, really. It's been there very, very sporadically and out of nowhere. So, like, this does feel weird.
I feel like they're moving too fast. I'm just like, chill.
They're not even in a relationship yet.
Everybody chill. You don't even get married like that.
No. Later, Susan and Julie are woken up as Carl is driving their RV away.
Concerning.
He turns around. He's like, morning, ladies. I got some surprise planned for my girls. And he revs the engine up and rolls down the lane. Then the RV pulls up, and Susan and Julie are still half asleep, but they stumble outside, and Carl's like, my gift to you. And he waves his arm, and there's, like, a huge white house, like, behind them. Like, a really big house. Like, to the point where I'm like, how rich is Carl? Like, none of this makes any sense.
Yeah, super big. Like, million plus. And really, yeah. Like, anywhere. I'm like, that's I mean, unless you're Texas or South, I'm like, there's probably a couple million there. Million and a half, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's huge.
It has a pool.
Yeah, Julie, like, runs inside and freaks out because there's a pool. And Susan just kind of stands there. And she's like, Carl, what's the catch? She's like, there's no catch. It's just for you and Julie. And Susan's like, I can't accept this. She's like, I got to get out of this mess on my own. And Carl's like, well, I owe you for cheating, and consider this payback. And Julie comes out. She's all excited. And Carl holds up the keys. And Susan's like, well, at least, or he says, at least no one could drive off in it while you're sleeping. Fair point. I will say that. Yeah. Susan, why the fuck was it that easy for him to get in there? That was crazy. But yeah, I believe that is the last scene of this episode.
I can take us through Gabby. I really enjoyed what was going on there. Oh, yeah. But overall season, I guess I should, like, just say, okay, Mike and her are going to get engaged too fast. Where the fuck did Carl come from? But also, I have a lot of respect that Susan's trying to get her life together. I can say that.
I do appreciate it. And I'm glad for once she was, like, skeptical of Carl's motivations, because for some reason she usually is just like, yeah, thanks for being nice, and, like, does not.
Thanks for buying me this house. Like, yeah. So I got to say that. But let's talk about Gabby. Gabby is having a hard time. And she's going to handle it like a bad bitch. She's my inspiration. She's got the inkling that something's up. She knows in her heart, but we're going to have to see what she does next episode. She bought Carlos in her matching golf outfits. Like, Carlos is just chilling, and she's like, we've got, like, we're going to go golfing, matching golf outfits.
Did you note her hair?
No.
Those pigtails she had? It was awful. It was awful. It was, like, mid-head, not like, high, not low. Mid-head, just sticking out like she's a Who from Whoville. I was like, bitch, please.
Girl, calm down. So he says that he can't go anymore. He's got to do community service for his parole. And this is the first time I'm hearing anything like that. And she's like, okay, I guess I'll call the club and cancel. And he's like, no, go without me. And she's like, I don't want to go alone. And I'm with her. I wouldn't really want to go alone if this was like a couple's thing. Yeah. He's like, I'd love to be there, but I can't just take the motherfucking lesson. And he's kind of just being annoying about it. And she's like, fine, I guess. He's a little bit on edge. And he says that or something. He's like, look at this crap the gardener is doing. He's checking out Yao Mei. And Gabby's like, and he has a crush, like, whatever. He's like, can I get a gardener that doesn't want to sleep with someone in my house? And I'm like, ew, why do you fucking care? That I would be so fucking annoyed.
Yeah, I'd be like, shut the fuck up, like, get over yourself.
And then she says, you pay him $6 an hour, so, like, what are you fucking worried about? And I was like, whoa. Like,
also, that's no money.
That's nothing these days, but okay, whatever. She's like, it's all about the perks, like having hot girls around. So I don't know.
With the possibility of sex, yeah. I guess.
With possibility of sex. So then she goes and takes the golf lesson, is hanging out with her instructor after, and they're making small talk, and she goes to the bar, and she's like, can I have something, like, strong, because this guy sucks, like, I have 9 more holes with him. And then on the bar TV, they're airing the news, and they're saying that someone got hit on the road that was cleaning up garbage, like, Hispanic male in his 40s. And he was a prominent businessman in the area. And then Gabby's phone rings and she is stunned. And at this moment in the episode, I was fully believing we were going to get another death. I was like, for real, they killed Carlos. I believed it.
How sad were you? Were you sad after his
behavior? I was lately? Just like, oh my God. Oh my God, it's happening. I'm like, this is more shocking than Rex. Like, I was shocked. I wasn't even like, I wasn't like, wow, he deserved that. I was just like, what are they going to do with Gabby now? I was like, yeah. But that doesn't happen. Gabby runs home and she's all upset, like standing outside of her car looking at the house. And Yao Mei runs out and is like, why are you here? And she's like, well, baby, Carlos died. And she's like, please don't kill him. And she's like, no, he's already dead. And there was an accident. He's all over the highway. And she's like, no, he's in the kitchen. And I was like, wow, biggest fake out ever.
That was a crazy fake out. Oh, fuck.
And then Gabby's like, what the fuck? And she runs inside and he's just there, like, reading the paper. And she's like, you're not dead. And he's like, why would I be dead? And she's like, the police called me and said you were dead. And a witness said they saw you run into the carpool lane to pick up a launcher that had fallen off a truck. And then she's like, why aren't you there? And he's like, I paid the gardener to go in our place. So now the gardener is fucking dead. And
also, though, why didn't he tell Gabby, like, oh, I could go?
Yeah, now. I don't know. Gabby's horrified. Well, because he didn't want to go golfing. That's why. So Gabby is.
I know, but I'm just like, if I were Gabby, I'd be like, why the fuck didn't you tell me?
I know. So Gabby's horrified and she's like, what? And she's like, they had your name. And he's like, oh, shit. And then Carlos is saying this all nonchalantly. And then finally he's like, oh, shit, it's Ralph. And then she is hugging him and she's like, why is your back all sweaty? And he said that he was working out on the treadmill and he's barefoot. And she's like, in your bare feet? And he's like, Ralph just died, I can't believe you're worried about me. And I'm like, ew, this is the most defensive, disgusting behavior. And Yao Mei comes by and bumps into him, and Gabby, like, sees it. I said, she's on to them. She sees the chemistry.
Well, and did you see that Yao Mei, when she came outside, she was, like, trying to pull her hair back.
Looked so frazzled. I wouldn't even ask questions. I would fucking fire her ass right then and there. I'd be
like, but she's pregnant with their baby.
I know. They really got themselves in a bind. Yeah. But It's flashback time. Mary Alice Young says, we met Gabby the day she moved on to Wisteria Lane. We were all excited to get a glimpse of a successful New York model. We saw more than we bargained for. And she pops up from behind some boxes in her bra and underwear, looking stunning. Mm-hmm. Her long hair, so hot, so beautiful. She's got a hot bod. They introduce themselves and she says, welcome. And I'm Gabby. And then the girls are like, would it be better if we came back? She's like, I was just changing out of my sweaty clothes. Didn't realize movie was such cardio. And she's literally in her husband's shirt and like bra underwear. Bad excuse. Carlos comes out with his dick out and is like, we haven't fucked in the kitchen yet. Like sees the girls and Gabby's like, I think we need to unpack the pants. And he's like, nice to meet you. And they're like newlyweds and they've been married for 4 months. And she's like, I've been dressed like this for two of them. And then back to real time, the most disappointing scene of the entire episode. Gabby gets in a bed with Carlos and she's like trying to nuzzle on him and probably touch his dick. And she gets close and he's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And she's like trying to have sex with you. And he's like, now it's kind of late. And I'm like,
that was so fucking shitty. I was like,
it made me like feel queasy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you don't want to have sex with me? You always want to have sex with me. You want to have sex with me an hour after your hernia operation. He's like, a man died today. And she's like, don't take it personally. And then she says, Yao Mei said the strangest thing to me. When I told her you were dead, she said, please don't kill him. And Carlos is like, that poor kid, we really need to get her English lessons. And Gabby's like, ew.
All he does is gaslight. That's it.
Gaslighting king. Him and Tom should be best friends. I hate both of them right now.
I know. They're both being dick wads.
Yeah, so it made me feel icky inside this whole entire storyline. But that's where Gabby's at.
Yeah. It was a rough one. I feel bad for her.
I feel bad that they have to keep Yao Mei around because I think that they should fire her because, like, it's getting uncomfortable for viewers and for Gabby.
For viewers and for Gabby. All right. So I'll dive in here to Lynette's story. So Lynette's first moment in the episode was kind of the one I already talked about in Susan's story when Susan calls her. So after she and Susan get off the phone, we see her by the pool with her kids and Parker comes up and he's like, Mom, when's Dad coming? I want to show him this dive. And she's like, he's not coming, but you could show me. And Parker just looks at her like, nah, fuck that, and walks away. So the next time we see Lynette is her flashback scene. So Mary Alice, Susan, and Bree walk up to Lynette's house with a big old basket of baked goods. And from inside, they can hear shouting, which causes them to be a little nervous about walking up. They all kind of are like,
on so, brand.
Yeah, no. And so then Lynette comes out and she's like freaking out and Tom's like running after her and she sees them outside the house and they immediately stop arguing and say hi. And Bree's like, hey, like maybe we should just come back another time. And Lynette's like, no, I need you to stay as impartial judges. And they're like, fuck. And so Tom, he's like, please don't. And she's like, nope. So she goes, let's suppose your husband begged you to get pregnant and out of the goodness of your heart, you agreed, even though it might derail your career, Lynette explains. A baby, singular. Then you go in for an ultrasound and you hear two heartbeats. Then and only then does your husband tell you that twins run in the family. Lynette then asks them whether she should punish him severely or not. And Mary Alice and Bree are quiet, but Susan pipes up and goes, well, actually, I think that twins are genetically determined by the mother. Yeah. And I'm like, why do you even say anything? Susan, like, what the?
Oh my God. Just pipe down.
Yeah. Tom smiles, but Lynette gets all pissed, and she gets really close to Susan, and she's like, what are you, a scientist? And Susan backs off. Bree smiles and tells them that they'll come back later, but Tom convinces them to stay, and he and Lynette hug, and he apologizes for freaking them out, but Lynette apologizes for being rude, and she's like, it won't happen again, especially because this will be our final pregnancy. And they kiss. So it was a fun little intro, I guess, backstory.
I liked Lynette's hair as well.
She also had the bangs.
She had some bangs with a long ponytail, and it was all styled, and she was just looking cute.
She looked hip. I liked it.
Yeah, and Tom was being kind of cute. He's like, I'm just your love slave. And they're like, you have a good husband, and like,
yeah, that part was
a cute moment.
It was cute, but it hurt my soul.
It hurt because I just want to cry for Lynette.
Yeah, me freaking too. So back to current day, Lynette and her kids are still at the pool and she's chilling with Penny and she calls the boys over to talk to them. And She basically tells them that tomorrow they're going to go to their new home. They're going to go stay with their grandma. And they're like, well, what about dad? And Lynette's like, no, he's not coming. But he is going to come and see you guys all the time. And she reminds them that they're all still a family, but they just won't be living in the same place anymore. And then Lynette's like, do you have any questions? And the boys are like, can we go swimming now? And she's like, all right, sure. They run off and jump in the pool. I felt for Lynette trying to, like, explain to her young children what's happening, but they're, like, not fully grasping this concept.
Yeah.
So she's very alone, I feel like, in this sad scene, and I felt bad for her.
I know. What a boss bitch. Handling everything. And I was also thinking, I'm like, she must be taking time off work, too. Mm-hmm. So not only is this now a single-income household where your son of a bitch husband is cheating on you and you're taking care of these, like, there's no money. She's not working right now. Like, she's probably getting paid, like, because of her, like, she has salary, but also just the fact that she has to take this time at all because your bitch ass husband. I'm just pissed about the whole situation.
No, I felt bad for her a lot. I do feel like Ed probably sympathized with her because I don't think Ed's, like, this horrible person. So I do feel like he was probably like, take the time you need. Like,
yeah,
you're good. But yeah, so later, Lynette is packing their bags and Porter comes out of the bathroom and he's like, hey, I want to go swimming right now. And she's like, no, like, we're getting ready to leave. And so he starts to, like, freak out and he goes onto the balcony and gets up on the table. And then he's, like, hanging over the railing and Lynette's like, please get the fuck down. And he just looks down at the pool, like, gives her the smirk and then keeps edging closer. And Lynette's, like, screaming at him, like, please don't do this. And so he then loses his balance and falls and Lynette screams and dashes to the railing and sees that he fucking fell. So we don't really see the aftermath, but next thing we see is Tom arriving at the hospital and Preston Parker run up to him and he gives him lots of hugs and kisses and Lynette's over in the corner and just kind of peers out over to him and he asks if Porter's okay and Lynette tells him that his arm is broken and he's having his x-rays taken. Tom, like, tells the boys, like, hey, like, go over here, watch your sister. And he's like, I tries to, like, talk to Lynette. And she's like, I have nothing to say to you. I just called you because I had to. And I was like, that was a bitch ass, like, response to say to him. I was very impressed. He's like, I have an explanation for everything, like, for what you saw. And she's like, fuck no. Like, I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't want to hear it. And he's just like, no, like, I'm not cheating on you. I never have and I never will. And then he, like, drops the bomb that he met a woman named Nora 12 years ago. And he's like, it was before you. And she was a dancer on a cruise ship, which I'm like, great taste.
I know. Tom. I'm like, yeah, I saw the same thing. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah. And he's like, we had a one night stand and I haven't thought about her in years. And Lynette's like, well, why do you have to go to Atlantic City every weekend? And Tom's like, well, we had a child and I only just found out about her. And Lynette, like, flips the fuck out and shoves him and pushes him to the floor. So then two nurses come running out and Tom's, like, sitting next to Lynette with an ice pack on his head. And he's like, the girl's name is Kayla and she's 11 years old. And he's like, I know I should have told you sooner. And then he's basically like, I just wanted to, like, have a paternity test to be sure. And I am the dad. And Lynette just kind of nods her head and he touches her arm and he's like, I'm so sorry. And she shakes him off and he's like, oh, and then so he just kind of looks like despondent. And she's mm-hmm. like, you have no idea how badly you scared me. I had already let you go. And so then a nurse brings Porter out and he starts showing his dad his cast and all the kids come in and Lynette kind of, she was like crying as she was saying it. And Porter's like, can we go home? And Lynette's like, yeah, we're going home. And Tom like gives her a big hug and she kind of smiles. I don't know. But I was like, fuck, dude, you should have, first of all, he should have told Lynette the fucking moment he found out that he might have a love child. Because this is not that bad.
Yeah, it's not like you go visit 10 times and then you're like, I should have told you. It's like, you've been visiting this bitch for a long time. And who's to say you aren't cheating just because you say, oh, I have a child and that's why I've been going. That doesn't mean you're not cheating with the mother of your other child because that looked like fucking weird. I don't know. I'm not fully buying Tom's, like, okay, he's been going because he has a child. In real life, I would never be believing that. I'd be like, sure, you have a child, but, like, no. Should have fucking told me. You didn't
go 10 times. I'm like, why are you drinking wine with her mom?
Yeah, I'm like, I think it's all wrong. And, like, I don't know that it's any better than him actually cheating on her.
Lying's all shitty. What I'm saying, though, is, like, if he had just told her from the moment he found out that he might have a child, I don't think this would have been a horrible, horrible thing, because it... I mean, it would have sucked, but it's still, like, he didn't cheat. It happened before he met Lynette. So it's, like, classic. I don't understand. I don't get why he lied. There's, like, no reason to.
Classic Tom. Just this is always what we say about Tom. Every time we talk about Tom, we're like, she should have just told him. Like from the beginning, but this is just like multiple times.
But like Lynette's, like it's really not better though, because your husband still was lying to you to the point where he's making up stories to travel to Atlantic City all the time. Like that's lying, still really yeah. Lying, spending their money on it, like
spending her money on it.
Yeah, I just found that to be very strange. I'm like Tom, like no, you still did something really fucking horrible by not being upfront about this.
Yeah,
I just feel like the only way to get through a situation like that is if the person just starts out with honesty.
Yeah, I don't think your partner should be lying to you about anything, really.
Yeah, no.
Like, nothing this big. That's stupid.
And if I were Lynette, I'd still be like, I'll go home with you, but I'm going to need time. This is, like, a huge fucking thing to process. But I just, like, I don't know. I was kind of like, Tom. And we know for a fact he's known for a while, because in the lead up to this episode, did you watch the previous one?
Yeah.
Yeah, they, like, show the scene with his dad. So I'm like, so you've known way longer, that at least since season one, which means half those business trips he was taking at that time were probably to go there. Wait. Because his dad says to him, like, what's going to happen if Lynette ever finds out?
Oh.
And they used that in the previously on. So obviously that's what that was referencing.
Oh my God, I didn't realize it was that long. For some reason,
I don't think the show meant to do that, but I'm like... Like when
they that's just way too long. That's a year. Oh my God.
At least a year.
Because he had like half the season where he's a stay-at-home dad, so there's no way that he's possibly going to Atlantic City then. That's all I'm thinking. Like
no, but remember in the first season he was always gone on business trips.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I bet some of those were to visit this little girl. But I'm just like, okay, so for him to be like, I just found out and I was waiting for the paternity test. Like, no.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about.
I'm like, no, dude, fucked up. And like he's known for at least a season and a half.
Yeah. Fuck.
Get out of here, bro. So that's where we left them off, and it was a pretty big bombshell.
I don't know. Somebody who doesn't need no man anymore, because all the men in her life have also been shitty, as Bree. And we start out Bree's storyline with a Mary Alice throwback. She met Bree the first day that she moved there, and there are certain people who, when you meet them, can't help but make a delightful first impression. And mm-hmm. Bree was not one of them. She says, I'm Bree, your new neighbor. Is this your frog? And it's like a garden gnome type frog. And she says, it seems my son stole it from your yard. And Mary Alice is super chill, our super chill queen. She says, oh, I don't mind. If he likes it, he can keep it. Mm-hmm. She says, don't tell him that. If he knows, then he won't feel guilty and he will never know shame. And I'm like, this is classic.
Oh, my God. It was
and,
so crazy.
Then Susan shows up with a crazy perm. And I wrote that in all caps because it was shocking.
I loved it. I was so excited about it.
Oh my gosh. And Susan's like, what's up? Who's this? And Mary Alice is like, this is our new neighbor. Her son took the frog. And she says, please don't make excuses for him. That's what his father does. And Rex is back. We get a moment of Rex.
I loved it.
And she says, this is Rex. She's like, and he's like, we're not weird. Just seem that way. This is my son, the criminal. And she says, go on. And he says, I'm sorry I stole from you. And it's a baby Andrew. And we just love this flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And so just so you know, my mom did teach me right from wrong. And my actions should in no way influence your opinion of her as a parent. And she's like mouthing the words along with him, like they had to repeat it a million times.
Yeah.
And she's like, is there anything you'd like to say to my son? Feel free to be harsh. And she says, no, I'm good. And she says, now that we're finished with this unpleasantness, I can assure you that we will be good neighbors and in time great friends. And they leave, and Mary Alice Young is like, I'm sorry. It's Rex, Andrew, and what was your name? And it's Bree. And in real time, somebody is like, Bree, Bree, and it's Orson. It's motherfucking Orson. We're like, what's happening? She is at the mental clinic having a nice vacation, and I am really jealous. And then Orson's like, I'm Orson. We met at Susan's house, like, burn down party, whatever, cleanup.
burn down party.
Yeah. And she's like, sorry, I didn't recognize. Small world. He's like, excruciatingly so. And she asks what he's doing there. And he says 3 or 4 times a week, he visits his friend in the corner in the wheelchair looking crazy. And he's like, what about you? And she's like, oh, I thought I could just take a nice long rest. And I would probably die if somebody saw me in my mental asylum moment. Mm-hmm. Not a glamorous one, but she says, listen, I told my friends I was at a spa, so if you see them, just fucking lie. And he's like, your secret's safe with me. And I'm like, Orson, you're so cute. She says, I'm not like these people. And he says, I can tell a real lady stands out in the crowd. And Brie was living. That's the highest compliment she's ever gotten.
Mm-hmm.
She says, that's very sweet of you. And he says, enjoy your rest, Brie Vandekamp. And the vibes are there.
Oh, yeah.
I said, Brie has moved on from her sex addict and is now longingly staring at Orson. Then some lady's like, I feel sorry for you, trying to convince your friends you're normal. And she's like, oh, are you doing that too? And she's like, Dr. Barr is out of his way to make me feel like a psycho. He's worse than these other patients. And then Brie's asking about this woman that hot Orson is visiting. And the lady says, oh, she's kooky, hasn't spoken a word since she got here, and just sits and waits for your friend to visit, and he talks for hours, and I don't think she can hear, and so that's what's going on. Next thing we know, Brie is in therapy raking some sand and some very straight lines, and her therapist does not seem to be getting through to her. And he says, you must find that peaceful, or like, you know, you've been doing that for 3 sessions now. You won't talk about anything. You just have, you rake those in remarkably straight lines. And she's like, is that what you're doing at when you ask me ridiculous questions about my childhood, like getting to know me? And she says, I'm not crazy. And he says, psychotherapy is how we help you deal with your issues. He's like, what kind of treatment did you think you'd get here? Like, this is a fucking psych ward. And she's like, I just want to be medicated. And he says, you don't need anything. And she's like, I have aspirin at home that packs more of a punch than the shit I'm getting here. And mm-hmm. I'd be pretty pissed too if they didn't medicate me there, because that's probably why I'd want to be there.
Yeah.
It says your husband died, your boyfriend killed himself, and you're an alcoholic. And I'm like, dang, when you write it all out on paper, Brie has to face that. And he says it's a lot of trauma for 1 year, and that's the truth. And he asked about the kids, and she lies. She says, they're fine. Andrew's backpacking through Europe, and Danielle is at cheer camp. And I'm like, this bitch.
Straight denial.
Yeah, so he's asking about the relationship with them. She's like, what do you mean? And he's like, are you close? Do you share things? Do they share things with you? What do you feel about them? She's like, I don't have time for this. Are you going to give me the drugs or not? And he says, no. And she's like, well, then I'm going back to my room. And Brie, I can't force you to open up, but I can make it easier for you to focus on your problem. She's like, how? And he's like, well, I'm going to have the orderlies confiscate everything, all your personal items, which I think is a little bit too far. Like, I don't know what you're signing yourself off to in these clinics, but that's, I don't know, it seems a bit too far. She says, I committed myself voluntarily. And he says, when you sign those papers, you put me in charge of your well-being, and I will help you in any way I see fit. I don't need much help, she says, because I'm not like these other patients. And he says, sure you are. You just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of agree with him that she probably needs more help than she thinks.
I mean, every time Brie thinks she knows what she wants, she ends up fucking herself further, so.
Yeah, she's not opening up, not being very receptive to this. I think it would be useful for her. I don't know how crazy the other people are. Like, they're making it seem like this is a real, like, clinic. Like, I don't know, some of these clinics are just for depressed people with alcohol or, like, substance abuse problems. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So she's being unreasonable. I'll stop here, and I'm going to talk about Betty for a minute, because Betty got arrested at the top of the episode, and her and Bree's storylines interact a bit. So precinct, and she's like, I guess these cops are like, your son confessed to murder. We have it on tape. And she says, my son has the mind of a child. He would confess to sinking the Titanic. And they show her the letter that she wrote a while back earlier in the season. And they're like, we think he wrote this. And she's like, wow, didn't know hunches are evidence. And I like Betty in an interrogation.
I do too.
She seems like she'd lawyer up pretty fast. And they say they aren't, but this is. We found your DNA on this jacket. We just need a sample now. You recognize this jacket? She's like looking at this picture of the jacket at the crime scene. It's covering Melanie Foster. And she's like, no, you don't understand. That jacket belongs to my other son. So now we know that Matt is the one who killed Melanie Foster. And I'll just finish up Bree's storyline, and then we can go through the rest of Betty and this flashback. But So that happens, and Bree, at the end of her storyline, after her fucking therapist is like, we're confiscating everything, she's listening to her voicemails, and she has one from Susan, and then she has one from Betty. And Betty is hysterical. She's like, the police have evidence against Matthew and Melanie Foster's murder. We have to find Matt and Danielle and get them back, because basically Matt is a murderer. That's what we discover. And so she tries to leave in the insane asylum, and these bodyguards grab her. And the psychiatrist sees this and is like, what's happening? Why do you need to leave? She's like, my daughter is in danger. And the psychiatrist is like, at cheerleading camp. And she's like, okay, that was a lie. She ran away with a boy, and he's a murderer. And obviously that sounds insane. The psychiatrist doesn't believe her. She's like, I can tell you don't believe me. And he's like, Bree, let's talk in my office. She's like, I don't have time for therapy, you quack. And he calls the nurse to give her the drugs that she wanted originally. And she's like, if anything happens to my daughter, so help me God. And she's all medicated now, and they drag her little limp body away.
It's sad. I was like, dang, this hurt. It's
sad because time and again, Bree tries to be the best mother that she can motherfucking be. And I respect the shit out of her for that. But all these things get in the way because of her own fucking lies. I wish she would stop lying about things and just be honest. Like, she really wants to be there. She fucks herself. Yeah, she really wants to be there for her kids. And obviously, Danielle probably will get murdered, and I wouldn't care because she's a bad character. But yeah, I feel bad. But either way, when Betty discovers this, Matt is at a hotel just staring at Danielle asleep. And then we get the flashback. Melanie was not dead when Caleb left. She coughs herself back to life and tells Matt about the attack. And Matt is like, my brother has never been violent, and I'm sure that he didn't mean to hurt you. And she's like, but he did. And he's like, let me take you home. And he helps her up. And she's like, this has been really traumatic for me. I think you can come over for the next few days and talk it out. And I'm like, ooh, girl, that was a bad angle. And he's like, we broke up. It's not my job to hold your hand. And she's like, well, maybe I shouldn't go home right away then. And she's still trying to get pounded, which is amazing because she was just unconscious 5 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's like, maybe I'll go to the cops first, because he's clearly not going to do it for her. And then she says, I was attacked. It's my civic duty to report it. And he says, Caleb didn't mean it. And he starts to go into a rage. And she's like, screw you. And he's like, you can't tell anyone. And she's like, I can tell anyone I want. And he's like, we're talking about my brother here. And she's like, he's going to go to jail, so shut the fuck up. And he grabs her. She says, let go. She slaps him, which, good for Melanie. She's trying to defend herself, but she needs some pepper spray or something.
Yeah.
And Matt beats the shit out of her, worse than Caleb did. And he's like, you leave my family alone. And then she's dead. And he covers that body in his jacket. And now he's just staring at Danielle, probably going to kill her ass too. So
I know. That shit's crazy.
I think I can leave you to talk about Zach and Paul, because you were pretty excited about some Zach movement
here. I was, actually. This is the first time in a long time I was like, this is actually some fun shit. I wish they'd set it up better, actually. When we see Paul and Zach, they're at the prison where Paul is being held for Felicia's murder. And they're, like, talking through the glass with, like, the phones. And Paul's like, I need you to talk to Noah. And Zach's like, fuck no. He's scary. I don't like him. And Paul's like, who cares? Like, this is my life. I need a big-time lawyer. And we need, like, a lot of money. And Zach is like, I mean, I could try, but, like, I don't, like, the last time we spoke, like, we weren't close. And then they start talking about, like, how they're going to get the money. And Zach's like, well, why do you even need so much money? I thought only guilty people needed expensive lawyers. Paul's like,
Paul really dug himself in a hole.
Oh, my God. And he makes it so much worse. So Paul's like, well, Felicia's been planning this for a long time. So I feel like now, because of this, the police are going to open up the Martha Huber murder case again. And Zach's like, you told me that you had nothing to do with that. And Paul's like, well, I wasn't involved, I promise. He's like, why are we even arguing? And then he's like, I'm your father, do what I'm telling you. And Zach's like, you're not my real father. And Paul, like, freaks the fuck out. Paul's like, we rescued you from your little drug crack whore mother, is what he basically said.
Yeah, oh my God, Paul is so evil.
And he's like, and your mom killed herself to try and protect you. So it's the least you could do is to do this for her. And I'm like, what the, like, I felt like that came up kind of out of nowhere. I was like, whoa,
I felt hurt by that.
Yeah. So Zach's just like, dang, okay. So he, like, hangs up. So I felt so bad for him. I was like, they just are, like, repeatedly, like, ruining this kid's, like, mental health, just, like, with every fucking shitty thing they could do to him at this point. The next time we see Zach, he goes to Noah's like bedside and he's like literally 2 seconds away from dying. He's like pale as hell, sweaty, disgusting, and he can barely talk. He's on a ventilator, and Zach tries to get Noah to give him money to purchase a car, but Noah's like, I already read the papers. I know what's going on with your dad. My guess is that he needs a big lawyer, so get some rich man's justice over here. And Zach's like, just kind of sits there and stares at him. He's like, I need the money. And Noah's like, no, like your dad put Deirdre into a box, so I have no interest in helping him. So then Zach like starts begging and he wants his inheritance. And Noah's like, basically you're not like strong enough to run my empire. Like you're weak. And he's like, I wanted to give it to you, but I have doubts. And Zach's like, so are you cutting me off? And Noah's like, yes, I don't have, like, you're too weak.
he's like, you weak ass.
Yeah, he's like, you fucking idiot. So then Noah's like, get the fuck out. So Zach starts looking around and he gets up and he goes and locks the door. And he goes over to the ventilator panel and he's basically like about to turn it off. And Noah's like, you're going to kill me. Prove you're tough. And Zach's like, no. And then Noah's like, see, that's why I can't give you the keys. And he's like, no balls. And Zach's like, all right. And then he like switches that shit off and the ventilator shuts down and Noah smiles and then struggles to and dies. And Zach just sits beside him and watches the shit fucking happen.
And I'm like, wow, Zach is low-key evil.
No, Zach fucking leaned into it. But honestly, if I was the only inheritor for a huge amount of money and my fucking grandpa was on death's bed and was calling me a weak-ass bitch, I'd be like, yeah, fuck you. I want to inherit this shit.
Yeah, I'd be like, before you can redo your will, I'm just gonna get
that
all day.
Yeah, just turn that ventilator off for a couple seconds and then turn it back on. Problem solved. No one will know.
Gosh.
Lysol that thing so there's no fingerprints.
But yeah, Paul is truly heinous in this episode. I'm like, I can't believe you're guilting your son like this.
I know, it's straight awful. And I'm like, you know, maybe your son would be more inclined if you were like a better dad to him. So
yeah. And like there was no exit monologue because it just said to be continued. So
well, this whole episode I felt frustrated because not the whole episode, sorry, I did feel frustrated by like there did feel like there were a couple like out of character moments because they were like, uh-oh, it's the last episode, we gotta like get this shit rolling. Because I was like, this whole season, like Paul's been so, like, I felt like he and Zach were building a better relationship. Because Zach was, like, so protective of him and, like, wanted to be with him. And so this episode was a bit jarring because they just haven't spent enough time on them.
Yeah, I feel like I don't even know, like, what's going on with them right yeah. now. And, like, apparently Mike doesn't care anymore that Zach is his kid. Like, I don't know, like, what happened, like all he cares, it's yeah, that's all out of character.
I just felt like it was one of those, and not just like his story, the only story that I felt like was, I mean, I guess all the women's stories were set up pretty well except for Susan's, just because they don't seem to know what exactly they even want with her this season. But like the Applewhite stuff felt super rushed this episode, like they got to put 5 yeah. episodes worth of shit into it.
I know. I was like, now we finally see. I feel like this could have been revealed bit by bit, but
they could have at least revealed like the part where we see Caleb hit her. Like they could have at least revealed that.
Yeah. Like some point.
Yeah.
See, like get some more Melanie Foster in there. This chick had one F. Mm-hmm. I hope she acted in some other shit after. Like, but yeah, we could do our fuck, marry, kill.
Okay. I mean, I'm gonna go fuck Mike because he actually was hot in this episode. Like, not just looks, like he was cool.
Yeah. Okay.
And his kiss with Susan, good stuff.
That was, yeah, good.
Who do I even want to marry? Is anyone even eligible? Like, is anybody in this episode, yeah. like, worthy?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I'm gonna let you finish yours, but I have one in my mind.
Fuck, I think I want to kill Carlos just because I feel like he's being, like, such a piece of shit with a baby on the way. Like, I don't know. I thought he was kind of over this part of his personality, so I'm like, ugh, yuck.
Yeah.
Maybe kill Tom, too. Throw them both in there because I'm just very agitated with their behavior. Mary? Man. I'm like, no one's, like, being really stable. I'm like, ugh, fuck. I don't even know. I might just throw a Hail Mary here and just say the first character that pops into my brain. I guess probably Lynette, just because she's super capable. Like,
yeah.
Like, good partner status. So, like, I guess that's who I'll roll with for that.
Okay. We're aligned on 2 of 3. So,
okay.
I would fuck Mike, clearly, because that make out was so hot.
Yeah.
And, like, he's just hot. And, like, I finally felt like he was being real again. Like, sweet. Like, oh, when he said, no, you're sexy. I was like,
damn.
So cute. I love that shit. And then I think I would marry Orson.
Okay.
I'm going to marry Orson. That's who I had in mind. Because I'm like, he was so sweet to Bree.
That's a great answer.
Like, he visited this lady. I don't even know who that lady is, but he's visiting her every week, like 3 or 4 times a week after he gets done cleaning people's gross mouths. Like, I just thought he was so sweet and cute. And then, yeah, I was going to kill Carlos. I'm going to leave Tom to redeem himself, but kill Carlos for sure. I wish he had died on the side of the road, like predicted, because I'm so disgusted at how he's treating his wife.
Yeah.
Like, after she didn't want to have a baby and then wanted to have a baby, is so passionate about having a baby for you. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're being so disrespectful.
Yeah.
Like, ugh, it makes me annoyed. So that's my fuck, marry, kill this week.
Okay, okay.
And for housewife of the week, I'm going to do an outlier. I'm going to have to say Susan, because I respect how much she is getting her life together and not falling for Carl's ploy and taking care of herself and her daughter in any way that she can. And I have mad respect for it. And I don't think she's gotten a single housewife of the week in the past 2 seasons.
I agree with you. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I had a lot of respect for it.
Yeah. No, Susan, for sure. Let's give it to her for once. She can reign this week.
And are you ready with your Apple rating?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
4.75.
Wow. You really thought this was a 4?
Yeah. I think it was good. I think it revealed some stuff, but it's like a lot happened and not a lot happened at the same time, because it is the first, like, I guess half-ish, but like of a two-parter. So I guess maybe that was a little low, but just overall I was kind of like, all the Applewhite stuff just felt really rushed. The Paul and Zach, like, their attitudes with each other was just kind of like very out of nowhere to me. I wish they'd set that up better. Like, don't even put them in at all at this point, if that makes sense. Like, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, there was so much excitement to me. Like, I was just excited by figuring out what was going to happen with all these storylines. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, Lynette and Tom, edge of my seat. Couldn't get enough of that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, did he cheat? Did he not cheat? Like, Gabby being a good ass wife and Carlos, like, being reduced, like, back to this behavior. Mm-hmm. I was kind of on my edge of my seat there. Bree in a mental institution, inspiration. Being trapped in that mental institution, crazy. Mm-hmm. Setting up her and Orson for me, I'm ecstatic. I can't wait to see what happens there. Susan, I respected Susan for once. It was all there, like, up there for me, but I had to knock off a little bit because of the Paul Zach, like, dynamic was weird, but I did like to see how, like, ugly they could get with each other.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I liked it, but I just wish a little more hinting towards their, like, this would have made sense in season 1.
Yeah.
Because they were getting real bitchy with each other. But yeah, no, it wasn't a bad episode. Like I said, maybe I went too low because I agree with everything you're saying. I think also knowing what's going to happen, maybe that made it not as exciting for me, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. And I was also excited by the Applewhites. I was like, oh my God, Matt is the murderer. I was really, like, jazzed about all the movement there. So
okay,
that's how I felt.
Oh, I like it though. All valid.
So 4.75 for me and 4 for you. Not our highest episode, but I mean,
it's okay. I've given really high scores when you haven't gone as high, so it happens.
Well, now we're at the end and next week we're finishing up season 2. It's exciting, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then we are thinking about reviewing John Tucker Must Die as a kind of, last season we did a summary, like, wrap up episode just reviewing the season, but we miss John Roland, and
I do miss him.
We think that's where he's moved on to.
Yeah.
It was like he moved to Seattle and started fucking with girls' hearts. But next week will be our last episode of season 2. Mm-hmm. We drop on Mondays.
Yeah.
If you've been along this long with us, like, review, share, do all the stuff. It helps us. We love making this for you. It's the highlight of my week. Like, I'm on board for these episodes.
Yeah.
It's a feel-good show, I have
to
say.
It's fun. It's like, it's almost surreal. Oh, it's fun.
But other than that, thanks for listening, and we'll leave you with our words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.